This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With eight delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product. With amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.
Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to 3 ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach, and an additional one in the evening when I am feeling run down. I've seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit and supports better sleep quality and recovery in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein. Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We're joined today by Mike Franco, mental performance coach with the Orlando Magic. I'm sure he'll correct me on the title, but more importantly, PG native, local bred, 831 talent. Welcome to the pod.
Appreciate you, man. It's always happy to be back talking to someone from the 831.
Love it. Let's dive in, since probably quite the journey to get into the NBA here. Take us through that. Like, how'd you even get into what you're doing, performance enhancement, and the steps along the way to where you are now?
Yeah, so I'm going to try to abridge this as much as I can, because this could take 3 hours. But for the
feel free to take as long as you want.
Yeah, so I think starting off, when, as most people that do want to get into sports psychology, mental performance training, anything like that, I think it always starts with when I talk to people or hear from other people or even ask other people questions, it's like you always have this like love and passion for sports and athletics. And it's always, I don't really know what I want to do, but I know I want to be involved in sports. And that's the usual starting point. In college, I'm doing the radio piece, newspaper, doing that at my 4-year university at Sonoma State. And I didn't even know sport at this moment. I don't even know what sports psych is. I didn't know it was like a thing. it's just out there. And so then fast forward, you know, what it really kicked off for me is I think I was like, how old was I? 24, 25, around there. This was, I think it was around 2013. But anyway, I was unemployed at the time and I was really just working out at this local gym down in Santa Clara. And they had this weight loss competition. It was a really good gym down there. At the time it was called FNS 360. I don't know if they've changed the name, but owner Brian Nunez, awesome guy, really influential. And he had a guy come and talk to us before, like the whole gym, they had a potluck. And this guy came and talked to us. His name's Adam Sacito. And he's a sports psych down in Santa Clara. And I know he's worked with San Jose State and a bunch of other teams, Santa Clara. And so he's talking to us about focus and confidence and just doing things with intention before this gym competition. And when he's speaking, I was just one of those things where it just hits you. It's like, this is what I want to do. It's almost like a unexplainable feeling, but it's just like a knowing, like, this is where I want to go. This is what I want to do. And I'm interested. And the funny part about all that, though, is I almost didn't go to this. And my girlfriend, she's very much encouraged me to go. I was like, why don't you just check it out, see what's going on. So I did. Thankfully, I did, because it's kind of started my path. And I talked to Adam and he gave me a couple books to read to see if I'm really into this. And I was like, yeah, I'm into this. I want to do it. And so I decided to take the next step is go to graduate school, because that's, I don't know any other step than that. And that's what he advised me to do. I was like, okay, I'm going to graduate school. And so I apply for that. Get in. The school was JFK up in Pleasant Hill, but they have online school, but they have a really good sports psych program. And you have the choice to be in person or online. I decided to do it online. And if I need to drive up there, I'll drive up there and go check it out for whatever speaker things become involved. And what's funny, in the process of applying for this, one of the first things they tell you is there's no jobs. So, okay. There's that piece, but I'm not really like too concerned about that. I'm like, whatever, we'll make this work out. And that's just kind of the approach I took, this kind of all-in approach of let's just see what happens. You're mostly trained at this point, like to be a consultant. That's what it prepares you for. And going into school is like one of the first talks that I ever, like every quarter they do a speaker series with you. And the first talk was with a Donald Foyle, former Warrior Center, who actually is a graduate from the school getting his degree in sports psych. He did it while he was in the NBA and finished it right after he retired, I believe, and one of his business partners. And so, you know, they're talking to me. I'm raising my hand, asking a bunch of questions, just trying to figure out like his perspective. And I'm just like figuring things out at this point and just asking questions. How can I've always loved basketball. My direction was like, I want to get in the NBA, or I want to at least be involved in basketball with this. And that led me to meeting a guy named Graham Bechart, who is, I consider, one of my best friends, mentor, who I've done work with forever with him. And he's done a lot of great things in the world of basketball and trying to make this normal. Because at this point, it's not seen as like a normal thing that everyone has or does. And you know, I meet Graham and we go on and do various projects. And that's a whole another few years of just working on YouTube videos, speaking at schools. We are creating an app for like meditations and visualizations for athletes. We're just doing anything and everything to just see what happens and try to make this work. And we're not like getting paid or anything either. So that's the other piece of this. We're just figuring this out and making this happen. And fast forward in quite a few years and we're still like evolving. Things are still going, our names are getting known a little bit more, at least in the Bay, and we're working with the WCAL schools and doing some of that, and athletes, and our friend has a gym and we're working with his athletes. And eventually, through the people I met in graduate school, and I just took this approach of, man, I'm all in with this. Like, I'm trying to meet people, and not to get a job, but to just like, how does this work? And there's a guy named Don Kalkstein, who worked with the Mavericks and the Red Sox and the Texas Rangers. He's with the Mavs for 20 years, and call him DK. Kept in touch with him. I drove up to meet him in the Bay Area when they were playing the Warriors, just to say what's up, just to figure this out. And eventually it all came back around. He said there was a position open potentially like in the NBA with the G League squad. And I was like, hey, are you interested? And at this point, I don't know. It's the Dallas Mavericks. And I said, yeah, I'm interested. So I meet up with him. We talk and eventually like I get offered the position and move to Dallas. And that kicked everything off in terms of a professional career. So there's a lot in between, a lot of like random things that happen. And been all over California trying to do this and make this work. But eventually, like, to get to the NBA, that was the path. The path was really through working with kids, meeting Don Colkstein, DK, and then putting in like kind of the sweat equity to just make the extra effort to figure out how to make this work and eventually get that opportunity.
Awesome. And your role now with the Magic, what exactly is that and how did that come about after working for the Mavericks?
Yeah, so the Mavs is where I met Coach Jamal Mosley. He was the lead assistant for the Mavericks. And a lot of my philosophy and background is like the mindfulness piece, meditation, but also like it's more than that, but he's really into that too. He's into jujitsu and Coach Mosley's very much into like mindset. He used to play. So we just hit it off. Like we got along really well in Dallas. And eventually when he got offered, I left the Mavs to go work with the Texas Rangers baseball team for 1 year. And then Coach Mosley got offered to be the head coach, obviously in Orlando. And then in before his second year, so after his first year, he called me and said, yeah, I really want you to be on our staff if you're interested. And I said, yeah, hell yeah, I'm interested. I love Coach Mosley. And I even told my girlfriend from day one when I met him, I was like, if this guy ever becomes a head coach, like I want to rock with him. Like he's awesome and such a good person and believes in what I do. So I'm so fortunate and lucky to be with him. And so he gave me a call and I go through the proper, I talk to the front office and explain how this position works. And they're asking me questions, feeling it out to make sure it's a good fit. And so, yeah, I got it. Moved to Orlando 3 years after being in Dallas. And yeah, taking me all over slowly moving west to east, which I never thought would happen, but here we are.
That's great. Can you also take me through, what does your job entail? Like for us lay people that don't necessarily have this front of mind, exactly do you do on a day-to-day, on an annual kind of, what is your involvement? And then we'll go from there.
Yeah, that's actually a great question because I think that's still evolving, right? There's no path for this. DK is the guy that's at least in the NBA that has been doing this for a while. But he always encouraged me to find my own way of doing things, and which I really appreciate. And he guided me when I needed guidance. But so let's look at it this way. A big part of it is going to be approached from a proactive standpoint. So that's, are you teaching foundational mental skills to help out our athletes at the professional level? So that could be something like, do they have routines? How are they preparing for games? How do you manage emotions in game? And then it can go from, how do you even come down after a game? Because the energy is crazy. The come down is real. And how do you like start to relax and recover? And then there's other things like there might be certain moments in the game, say you get caught up with the refs. Like, how do you manage that? So there's certain things that you try to teach, and it could be individual plans. And there also could be certain things where you're also trying to teach, like, creating a philosophy and a foundation that everyone else can grab on, like everyone on the team can grab onto. So that could be having an next play mentality is something we talk about a lot, but what does that look like? How is that implemented every single day? And so that's like the proactive piece, is like fitting things in with what we already do. Then there's a piece where it might be a little reactive, where I might notice something that throughout the course of a season or a few games, looking for patterns, maybe like in this situation, this player really loses focus, or doesn't have to always be bad, but like maybe you're really great at this and they don't even realize it, and they kind of help them realize that even more. And how do we lean into that? And so it's like the reactive part could be even conflict management. We're in the NBA, but every other team, you're going to have conflict and there's things on the line. Emotions are high. Everyone cares. So how do you deal with maybe a miscommunication that happens, or how do you make sure that doesn't happen again? Or how do you help someone set up a conversation? That's another piece of it. And then I think there's like a whole nother side of it too, where it's even with the younger players, is how do you help them establish like really good professional habits? And some guys already have it and some guys don't, but it's not like they're coming from a space of they're doing it on purpose. You just don't know what you don't know sometimes. So making sure they're set up for success in their careers, like simple things like time management, having a schedule. What does it really look like to work hard? Are they communicating with their coaches? So there's all these, like, for me, it's evolved every single year, but I think this year I've started to really, I don't want to say I've got it, but I have such a clear vision of what this needs to look like, and especially with our team with young guys. So I know I went off a tangent with your question, but eventually I really see it as there's a proactive mental skill part. There's a somewhat that you don't prefer it. There's a reactive part. And then there's a part where you're helping everyone grow and the team grow and helping support like the coach's message within what you teach. And what really, what I made the big change of last year, which I think in my mind was probably been the most impactful on my career, is I just started looking at myself as an assistant coach that I just specialize in the mental side. And that's it. Not I'm a mental performance coach, but I'm assistant coach. And in my mind, and I specialize in the mental side. Like I'm on a day-to-day basis, I'm still there rebounding, help pass. I'll be involved in drills. I sit on the bench, behind the bench during games. I'm in all the coaches' meetings. I'm in the film sessions. Like I'm in the mix. Like you're in it every day. I travel full time. So that's just how I approach everything. And if you looked at me just watching practice or a game, you just think I'm another coach. That's how it is. It's, it should, the way the position I believe in the NBA, and it could be different from other sports, but I think you should be blended in. I think you should be part of the mix. I think you should be involved. Like the whole goal is to integrate this into everything we do. We're getting there, but I really believe that's the most effective way of teaching it. And I'm very lucky and fortunate that this organization and Coach Mobley backs it up, because you can't do anything. No matter how good you are with the knowledge you have, you don't have the support of the front office and the head coach. Like you're, it's going to be a tough ride.
Yeah, I'm curious, based on how you just described that, and you mentioned routines, you mentioned individual versus group stuff. I want to start with routines. And it seems like in professional sports, the way that those lessons used to be taught were from the vets down to the younger players, but there's a narrative around we don't necessarily have veterans anymore and all of that. But at the end of the day, I just want to know from you, how important is routine in regards to success, not just for professional athletes, but for coaches, for amateur athletes, for humans going through their day-to-day business? Like, talk a little bit about the power of routine, what you found best works to establish consistent ones, and any wisdom you can offer in that space.
It's interesting because as much as I do believe it, and but it, with the lifestyle, so just from my personal experience, the people I'm around, our lifestyle is so broken up though, even though we have the road trips. Most of these guys aren't even in a city for more than a month at a time, even the off season. So, okay, we preach routine and we want that, but then it's like, there's all these factors that pull us away from it at the same time. So yeah, I think it's important to have a routine in a perfect world because it anchors you in your day, right? You're like, no matter what, I got this done. This kind of helps reset me, whether it's getting shots up beforehand or afterwards or your recovery. But what I've started to look at it in a certain way, what I find more effective is just like, I have this like non-negotiable checklist in my mind of here's what at some point in the day, like these things need to get done. And it's simple. Like it could be, for me, I try to practice what I do, my meditation. I might write in a journal, I might read. But like certain things work to help me get in a good space for the day. For an athlete, that might look like no matter what, I'm getting up like 500 shots in the off season. I'm going to make sure I hit the cold tub. I'm going to make sure I get my stretching in. It doesn't have to be complex. I think there's a big thing with routines where it's like, it has to be this immaculate like morning thing or night thing, but it's just, no, what are some things that would help you like win the day? What is a question I propose to myself and some guys, like, what is success for the day? What is that? It could, some days you don't have it, dude. Like I don't got it, but if I do this one thing, like that's success for today. And on the days where you really got it, like it's like, all right, let's go a little more. And maybe your successful today is a little more, but almost like a set of non-negotiable things I think is really important. And that is something that can anchor you. And no matter what, like I got these things done. I think it's very important to help you stay like solid in yourself. Being in a good space to win the day is very important.
Yeah, I love how you have simplified that down to figuring out what they are for you in a way to help you become the best version of yourself at any given time, right? Whether you have it, as you said, or whether you don't. What are the non-negotiables that you're doing that are going to allow you to chalk up today as a success?
Yeah, and I will say, like, what you don't want to have happen is to start to be stressed out about routine. Like, cause then like, you can just go off the other side, off the deep end with it. So I didn't do this, so now I'm going to have a shitty day. So, no, like it shouldn't be that way. It's all about getting you back in a good space for the day. And it's like, the reason I say that doesn't have to be like a certain order, at least for me, is like, you need to rest and recover and you need to sleep. That doesn't mean you need to be waking up if you have the choice to like only get 5 hours of sleep. Like, no, get 8 hours if you need that, if you're able to. I know not all of us always have this like flexible freedom of to do that. But when I am within the lifestyle I live and the guys I'm around too, it's getting at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. in a city. Just because you have a morning routine doesn't mean you necessarily need to like just sacrifice the most important recovery tool you have. So it's finding out like what works for you and what do you need the most. It requires some self-awareness too.
Yeah, as you said at the beginning, it's very complex and still evolving. And so it's finding the sweet spot of here are the perfect world scenarios. And then here's the reality of my time and space and the things pulling on my attention. I want to go back to this idea of group versus individual. Yeah. How much group time, let's say, do you get where you're in essence teaching, I don't want to say a class, but some sort of led activity versus most of this stuff being one-off with individuals? And the reason I'm asking this is always what's applicable for others that are listening, right? What can they take away? How can they structure something that's similar, even though they don't necessarily have your background and expertise?
So I'm really very happy you asked this because this has been like a revelation for me this last couple seasons, because before it was all individual for the most part. I could get group time, but I did a couple presentations with our teams every year, but you get this feeling sometimes when you do group stuff is anyone really, how locked in are they? It's not really like the basketball environment. Like, you know, it's sitting in a room. This isn't football where they're used to like studying and watching so much film and grinding on that all day. But so I was like, what's the most, I've been thinking of this question. What's the most effective way of doing this? It's been driving me crazy. And so it used to just be all individual plans, a little more reactive than I want it to be. But I'm just like, how do we get this in a better system, like from the mental side, at least to get this more normalized? And I've always been thankful because Coach Carlisle would give me the floor some, like at the time or when I was in the G League, but you just don't really know what's effective. Cause like in one hand you got like my first year is like Dirk Nowitzki in the room, but then you also have like rookies. So you got guys in his 40s and you've got an 18-year-old. So what am I going to say that hits with, that's where the group stuff gets challenging, right? There, because there's such a gap. So I started thinking, I've been thinking and thinking it, but to answer your question, I've been amazed by like how this has evolved in my mind, but I look at it this way. So what's our message for the year, right? Like thinking of coaches messaging, how do I fit that into what we already do? So for us, we always have film and it could be 10 minutes max, 15 for scouts. Let's just say we're scouting the next team. What I started doing, one of our things we've been talking about in one of my foundations, next play mentality, let's just use that, right? Every coach that coaches can use that in what they do, moving on to the next play, refocusing, resetting. And we can say next play, but we also have to have things to back it up. So some of my group presentations is all about like body language and next play. So I would hunt down film of us doing it really well, like guys moving on like quickly, like refocusing fast. This can be low hanging fruit. You cause a turnover and everyone sprints back to get a dunk, or you turn it over, our guy sprints back, chase down block, like little simple examples, start showing it on film. That's part of like our mental program and how we want our players to approach the game. So I'm like, man, you know, what if I made a whole scout about this? So this year I made a scout on body language and yeah, I'm looking up other teams we're playing and guys not sprinting back. And you look at, you break it down. It's like, that's an easy 8 to 12 points a game in the NBA. That's huge. That's your advantage. So then framing everything into what we want our team to be, we talked about being aggressive this year, putting pressure on the rim, but it's just like, you then add in the mental side to what we already are doing. So we're already in the film room about to go through player personnel. So let's add in a few mental clips ahead of that. And that's how I've evolved this in, is really just adding things into what we already do and really breaking it down of what we did really well, moving on to the next play. This is what it looks like. This is what it doesn't look like. And I even would pick photos. We want to be a palms down team, which means palms down is we're calm, cool, collected. We know how to handle situations. So showing pictures of Kobe Bryant doing it, Michael Jordan, our own guys doing it, looking calm and confident. And then I would find pictures of other guys in the NBA putting their hands up, yelling at the referees. And who, you have to make the decision, who do we want to be as a team? So that's how I started approaching doing group stuff versus like just sitting there and teaching, here's how you visualize. There's a time and a place for that. But I've started to notice, like, I implement everything I do now into what we are already doing as a group. Like, whether it's, if I'm going to introduce breathing or visualization, will be during like a recovery session with the team in the weight room. It'll be film. Like, so I'm trying to find all these different avenues. Like, film is going to be showing like next play mentality clips, and then it'll evolve sometime this year for sure to something different. But if we can have a mental advantage, and that goes across like from middle school, high school, college, pro, like a being locked in a little bit longer than the next team, that's it. And it's not about changing everything, but a couple plays here and there, that's big. That's really big.
Yeah, and I would imagine, based on where the game has gone to where it's not as micromanaged as it once was as far as play style, right, where the NBA seems to be more about just getting into actions and letting players make plays, I would imagine that the mental advantage of being able to stay locked in and stay palms down, as you call it, is going to lead to that 8 to 12 points a game that makes a huge difference over the course.
And that's
of
also like the language is important. That's one thing I've really learned, like the messaging and language every single day that we use is so, like, I just use lock in, like you said, staying locked in. But I want, a goal for me is like everyone on our team knows what locked in means. Like, when we say lock in, like my goal this year is like, we say lock in, that means no, I'm focused on this play right here, right now. Like, we just say words as coaches, but do we really have a meaning behind it? If I say lock in and a player interprets it a different way, then what am I doing? That doesn't mean, when I say focus, what does that mean? So helping us realize like this little areas where we can all be on the same page with it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And defining vocabulary that is unique or special to your program is something that often slips through the cracks. Since you brought that up, let's go there for a minute. Let's share, if you don't mind, a few of the phrases and or terms that you have found to have great stickiness over the course of your career and definitions for each of those. What are some of those that you use repeatedly that have actually made a difference versus some that you've discarded?
Next play, obviously, I've already said it. That is the one that everyone can hang on to. That's the one I hear guys talk about on the bench. That's like the lowest hanging fruit one. Like, you say next play, you show it. Everyone knows what that is. And that is something that I've been shocked, like how much it's repeated. But I'm with it, obviously. Like, it's nice, but that's a big one. I think next play, palms down is newer. Graham really came up with that. Me and him are so tight. He's like, dude, run with this. This is going to work. So palms down has actually been one that we've, this year, our guys repeated quite a bit. And this comes with a hand motion too. So you see guys coming in the timeout and they're doing the palms down motion to each other. And that's been pretty good. I think I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Like, we have some.
I would even go to that palms down motion in regards to what I'm doing right now with my palms up is often a unintentional reaction physically to things that don't go your way. And I talk to my athletes all the time. So don't ever put your palms up at me. That is not indicative of a relationship that we want to have. So even the idea of, hey, yeah, you're calming down, you're pressing that tension down, it also is the counter to, this is never a good thing. Right. And it's never going to be interpreted well, the palms up motion. So I think the stickiness of it in connection with the rationale of why and the physical piece of that is super important.
Yeah. And just an understanding, like the way I phrase it is like, we're trying to choose our response and everything, like versus react. So I'm not saying you can't go yell at the ref. Like, for us, it's a little different than like high schoolers, right? Like, you're not about to do that. I'm not going to tell 36-year-old Joe Ingles like, yo, dude, you can't. Like, no, it's your choice. But if you're going to do it, just at least know you're going to do it. Know what you're doing and have a conversation, but you don't need to start screaming.
Okay, hold on. Let's talk about that, because this is something that I message to our athletes all the time. And jokingly, something I stole from Point Guard College is, all refs are blind cheaters that hate you. Not that they really are, but if your mentality is that, you don't get caught up in the weeds of, that was a bad call. If you already think they're against you, then just accept that and control the controllables and move on. Yeah. What have you found for everyone listening, specifically the coaches who at times are the worst when it comes to engaging in the refs, what are actually effective communication strategies with officials versus stop wasting your time and coach your kids?
I think it's approaching with a calm but like real demeanor. Like it's approaching not as I'm coming at you, right? Knowing the ref's name is big. That's something we emphasize a lot on the bench, knowing their names. And then asking a question like, hey, what did you see there? Here's what I saw. And now, look, this is easier said than done because we all are competitive. We want to win. But you also look at how to, if you are really competitive, you're not trying to put someone down there. You're trying to find that edge. Refs are human too, as much as you want to believe they're unbiased robots. You're trying to get an explanation. So are we say, hey, can you look out for this? This guy's doing this. Can you look out for this? Or our guy's getting held right here. You're in that ear with it. And I believe that the energy you put off as a coach to your team is going to model that, especially with the refs. Those are some of the simple things we do, just the approach and the questions that are asked versus like just yelling at someone.
No doubt. And I think that's super important. And one of the phrases that you just used is one that I think many more people should adopt, which is what did you see there versus trying to tell them what happened, right?
Yeah. And here's what I saw. And then it's like you have a dialogue.
Like, yeah. And I have found that as soon as you lead with that, you know what they saw. It doesn't really matter what you saw because they're the ones making the call and you can move on. But I want to pivot now to something else. In the professional sports realm, you have this interesting balance of we're trying to win games and at the same time, players are trying to look out for themselves to get their next contract or to enhance their playing time, whatever that might be. So there's this give and take that you have at the lower levels, but not the same way in which people are getting paid and there's millions of dollars on the line. Yeah. How do you navigate that as a coaching staff, one, and then as a mental performance coach in regards to doing your best to get people to row the same direction?
Yeah, that's if you can do that in the NBA, that's a special season because it's not going to be all kumbaya and everyone's bought in all the time 1,000%. And that's like I think part of it is you go in knowing that and accepting that in the same way we ask our players to accept bad calls and accept certain things. Like I think as a staff, at least for me, it's like I go in, this is the reality of the situation. You can even take a look at the contract landscape. Okay, I look into my crystal ball and see what potential things can go on down the road. But I think like you have to have, first of all, a tight coaching staff, people you trust, people that are about the right things around you. And I think like us with the Magic, we have that. And I know we have that. And we have such good people. And like the coaching staff to be like putting out the same message every single day, which is going back to like messaging is just so important of what our team is about this year. And just being so convicted in that every single day and preaching that is huge. And you know what, guys aren't always going to be happy. That's the reality of it. And then it's okay. We're going to you have to have that communication. And that's where I think Coach Mosley is like a master. He's a great communicator. He's straight up. He's honest. And even if people don't like it, like at least they're not going to be blindsided by anything. And so I think like, the communication piece is just huge. And that comes from the player side too, is now it's like you have the right coaches talking to the right people and saying messages to the team all the time when there's no inconsistency in that. Because once there's some inconsistency, the players are smart. Like they know what's going on. Other coaches are smart. They know what's going on. Like you can see if there's any inconsistencies in anything. And that's where you might find yourself getting into some trouble. But navigating that is just like from the jump, like from training camp. It's like, here's the roles, here's the expectations, here's what's going on. And if you preach like being competitive in practice, then, you know, you also have to reward certain things like that you say is like what we value. You have to hold people accountable to things that we say is non-negotiable. Like we don't accept this. And then you have to follow through with that and be able to take that heat.
Let me follow with this because it's interesting, the last 30 seconds of your answer for me, which is one, if you're saying you value X, then you're going to have to figure out a way to reward that. Your talk track has to be in alignment.
Yeah.
And the second thing you said, which was from training camp from jump, this is your role X, Y, and Z. And I really want to dig into role definition because I think it is often an area of growth for most programs, because what you said, Coach Mosley's very direct. He's honest. They might not like it, but there's no confusion as to what's going on. And yeah, communication is key and paramount. So how have you seen in both the G League, the NBA, and your time with Major League Baseball, the impact of clear role definition or not? And can you give a little bit of primer on how you've seen that done, what you've seen happen when it hasn't been done well, and some best practices for clearly establishing role definition for people?
Yeah, I think it's probably at first, it's going to be the clearest thing is you have basically the whole team in the room and you go through everyone's role for the year, like at the beginning. That's step one. And then step two would be, I'm just going to keep this simple, is like, then if making sure individually, guys, you might dig a little deeper into that, maybe not in front of the whole team, but here's what we want out of you this year. And here's what, how we see it. And now that also gives the player one-on-one to give an opportunity to really like any objections, any questions, any clarity. But I think that's also communicated throughout the entire year. Coaches that are working with that guy, mostly make sure they are on the same page with what the role is. And that it's always reinforced in that way. So you're constantly making sure, like I use this phrase, like just bump people back on the tracks when they get off a little bit, but like it, in a way it's that. And then as situations arise throughout the year, like when guys are clear on what is expected of them, then let's just say they're not happy about it, but at least they know. And then they can try to like, are they stick to their principles of who they are as a player? Let's say let's use this example. Say someone who doesn't agree with their role, right? Or they say, I don't want to be this. I think I can do more, which is usually the main thing. The first thing is, are we checking the box from my point of view, my job? It's okay. Are we checking the boxes on everything we can do to keep us on the court? What's going to get you on the court? That's usually the first thing. For most coaches, that's going to be defense. It's going to be communication. So let's just say we tell a guy, like, your role this year, I think, is going to be like, just we need you to defend and be a 3-point shooter. That's a lot of the NBA right now, but they think they can do more, which of course, as a player, you love that, right? As a coach too, you want to hear that. You don't want to get, of course, like that's the other side of this is you have to be empathetic with guys. Wouldn't you want someone that's hungry to do more on your team? Most people look at it as like a problem. Oh, this guy isn't happy, but part of my role is being unbiased in some ways. Like I'm meeting you where you're at. I'm empathetic towards, I understand, like, why wouldn't you want to be the best player you can be? But to do that too, is you have to gain the coach's trust. So like, star in your role right now. We all heard that term, star in your role. And then as time goes on, you get a little bit more. You get a little bit more, but it's not all going to happen at once. There's not everyone is going to be Luka Doncic. It's just not. You're just not. That's the harsh reality of the NBA too. It's like, it's only so many shots to go around. So prime example of this, Dorian Finney-Smith is star in his role, but then he's playing 30 minutes a game on a playoff team, went from undrafted. But it's like you gain trust in what you are doing, what your team is asking you to do. And then the more you prove that you just are very solid in that, you then gain more and more leash. But also on the flip side, it's just because you don't like your role doesn't mean you stop working. Mm-hmm. Like you don't stop working on other things because your time is coming. Where I've seen it not work, G League is a big example of that. G League is pretty wild. Like you go from playing, you could play 38 minutes a game, like almost the whole game. Then the team sends down like the roster guys, you go to not playing the next game at all. But to stay ready is so important. And like your role can change every night. So it's, but then it's, let's say you don't play 3 games in a row, you get in your feelings, you get really upset. Then all of a sudden those guys are gone because injuries on the big team. You have scouts in the stands, but you haven't stayed ready for a week or two. And then you look bad all of a sudden.
I think it was Alex Caruso who made a comment that the reason he was able to find success is because many of the people in the G League think they're trying out to be Steph Curry when in reality you're trying out to be the custodian and be malleable in whatever it is you're being asked to do. And so that mindset is what it sounds like you're describing.
Yeah, and I think that's part of role clarity though, and having coaches that are going to be honest with you in what that reality is. The reality of a lot of the G League, and there's always exceptions, right? But like you just said, you're not going to be given a 10-day contract to score 20 points a game. It could be just you're coming off the bench to change the energy, to guard a player for 5 minutes while the primary defender is taking a break. But you do that really well for 5 minutes. Okay, he was locked in. He was ready to go. Then who knows what the next thing is. It's a patience game.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I think that's the most important thing to help players realize too, is this is a patience game. And of course, you're going to keep working and get better. And as a coach, we're going to pour everything into you to help you get better. We're not going to just ignore you. But like every role is important. And throughout the course of a year, like even in high school too, like there's certain guys out of nowhere, they're going to win you a game some days.
Everyone's
going to provide.
Yep. Let me ask this. What was the difference working with a baseball team compared to working with basketball programs?
I think like baseball is a lot more, there's more people. There's way more people. Like the roster is usually like 26, 27. It's just a whole different flow to the day. Basketball is like hyper efficient. Baseball is a long day every day. Like you're there at 12 or 1 and the game's at 7. Basketball is almost hyper efficient to the point where it's almost, like today we show up for an hour for shoot around and we all go home and we come back for the game. It's like you can go the whole day without really even like talking to someone just because the pace is like crazy. So I think those are like the main differences in the baseball is just you deal with a lot more failure, right? Like one at bat, strike out, you got to wait almost like an hour for the next at bat, maybe longer. For the players, you're like just grinding on that. You're thinking of that, or you try not to. And so I think basketball, it's like you can make things up in other areas. Like you can have really good defensive play, you can guard your guy, even if your offense isn't going, you can get rebounds. You can do other things to like change the energy of the game. And baseball is a lot more individualistic.
So how do you tackle that from a coaching perspective in regards to what you do when baseball is built on much more failure? 3 out of 10, you're a Hall of Famer. So it's like, how do you navigate that as a
coach? I think it's a lot more like perspective and like, how do people's belief systems work? I think that was like a big thing is in helping them. I think a big thing in baseball is having things like spiral is not like you're trying to avoid the spiral, right? You're trying to avoid the snowballing effect and you're trying to just look at everything as one at bat, one game, one day, and try not to get things to turn into 0-for-4 turns in 0-for-8. And all of a sudden you start thinking about like, when's the last time I got a hit? Was it a week ago? You're trying to stop the spiral and just constantly look at things like one thing at a time.
Yeah. And I would imagine in a sport like that, as you described it, that is what separates greatness. Because if you're in the NBA, if you're in the Major League Baseball, if you're in the NFL, if you're in professional hockey or any professional sport, your skill set at a baseline is good enough to be there. But how you deal with that failure, I would imagine, is the biggest separator of greatness. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it translates to not just amateur sports, but also people's professional lives, people's day-to-day?
That's awesome, because I think that is like the way you view the world and the way you view adversity, the way you view like failure. Like we've talked about role definition and all that, but all that is like, how do you respond to things and how do you look like through your lens? Like, how do you look at an adverse time? Everyone's heard a lot about the growth mindset now. It's like, am I looking at this as something that's going to help me get better? Am I looking at this as a challenge, or am I looking at this as like the end all of I suck, or how are you talking to yourself? And I think like the way you look at scenarios is like, you want to find a solution. You want to find out, okay, maybe I'm not happy with the scenario I'm in, whatever that may be, work, life, sports, your role on a team, coaching, but okay, what's the next thing I can take? What can I do for myself to help improve the situation? And it's quite simple, really. It's just a matter of how do you want to look at things? Do you want it to respond in a way that's going to be helpful for you, or do you want to just dwell on it? And this kind of gets in this way of feelings aren't facts. You feel, or you're going to feel how you're going to feel. But like at the end of the day, like an acronym we use, like WIN, what's important now, what is important right here, right now, what can I control? And that's what being competitive is. Like, what can I control right now in this scenario? and you just go back to the controllables, like you said earlier. But that's the system, right? What's in your control? Next play, I'm in the moment, and you just try to repeat that as much as you can.
And it's interesting that you say it's simple, because concept-wise, it is. This isn't new information. Yeah. The application of it is not always simple, especially depending on people's backgrounds, what they've experienced, what trauma they've gone through, whatever, what they're carrying outside of work to work on a daily basis. So what are your best tips and techniques to kind of build this over the course of time, other than routine, obviously, but some takeaways that people can walk out of here with and go, okay, I'm going to start doing that. Just like one or two things.
Like you said, it is simple. It's simple to say, hard to execute. And it's almost like a lifestyle shift in some ways to really, if you really want to be in this mindfulness, again, is what I hang my hat on a lot of things, because I think it's very applicable to the NBA game and basketball in general. But like, starts with, what do you value as a person? How do you want to show up every day? And that's a lot of work I've done with athletes, actually, is this identity piece of how do you want to show up to people every single day? Even myself, even coaches, like I do a lot of work with the coaching staff too. And it's, if you try to improve as a coach, like you have to be on more than the athletes have to be on. Like you, if someone's down on energy, you got to pick them up. But like, how do you want to show up every day? And to really defining like what that is for you, what do you really value in yourself? If there's something you want to improve upon, maybe like for myself, example, like taking a little more initiative. So then recognizing like what areas do I need to take a little more initiative in? That's one thing. I think another thing is then having a count. I call it like having a counter to when you might feel like a trigger or something, or when you lose your focus. It's the same thing we give the guys in the game, but what's your anchor? Like anchor breath is a big thing we talk about. And when I lose my focus, when I maybe am not feeling in a great state, like what do I do to bring myself back and reset, refocus the day? So what is that process? It could be taking a big deep breath in, maybe a statement you say to yourself. For some guys, just lock in, right? Just from a competitive standpoint. But that's having a counter to your triggers, or counter to like when you're not feeling the way you want to feel per se. Like, how do I just bring myself back? So I think that's really important. So now you're having like something that can set you up for the day, right? And almost an identity piece. Like, here's what I'm a game plan of what I'm going for. Then you have a piece where here's what's resetting me when I get off track. And then there's this other piece of how do I just make sure I stay in the moment and practicing that all the time. So setting yourself up for the day is also what is success for me today. So now you have some almost like a little compass to guide you in some ways. So in terms of applicable things, the value system's huge. Being able to reset yourself is big. And then having that vision of what is success for me, just that helps you manage the day and get through the day.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, I'm going to wrap up with this. You've worked for 3 professional organizations.
Yeah.
What would you say if you had an opportunity to name a few specific things at each stop from certain individuals of your choosing that you've learned that have helped mold who you are as a professional? Being around so-and-so, this is what I got out of it. Being around so-and-so, this is what I got out of it. This is what I would offer the rest of the world if they were willing to listen.
The stop in Dallas, I think something that I really learned was to have fun. Like it always comes when you perform well for everybody, you still want to have fun. Like fun is something that cannot be taken away. And that was the first realization when I see people not having fun, or when they do have fun. Like we had some fun guys on that team. Dirk was always having fun. Luka Doncic thrives on fun. Coaching staff, like when we were having fun, like that was awesome. And you see how much better and freer and looser everyone feels. And that's something like, I wish I allowed myself a little more fun going through this process of getting to the NBA. Like it's easy to say now, because before you're just trying to just like hold on. And, but like looking back, it's like, there's some really cool experiences. Like do wish I enjoyed a little more. And fun, I think, is a big theme. I want to enjoy being in professional sports. Like, what a cool experience, and I'm thankful for it. And I don't want to, like, look back and be like, I was so worried about pressure or this or that, like media or expectations. It's easy to get caught up in a lot of that. So I think the reason I say the Mavs was there, because that was my first taste of, like, when media is involved, when, not for me, but, like, in general, just observing, like, when there's pressure to win games. and people's jobs depend on it. It's like almost a paradox, right? You want to win. You also want to have a good time, but like also everyone, we all know this is like a results-based profession. And so next stop, Rangers. I think that was a big, for me, consistency. The great, and I'm not even going to use really the players as an example. I think the staff members. Consistency of, like our medical staff there was amazing. And they would just bring the boot up every day. They work like, work out all the time. Like the consistency of people who are really great in baseball, but also like in that profession and on the staff, like seeing the consistent actions of them every single day is pretty incredible. Because as a staff member, it's like there's some days you don't want to bring it. Like the travel, like there's just days you just feel like you don't got it, but like you've got to bring it. And those guys were awesome. Like consistency in all their approach and everything they do every day was really incredible. And you never felt like they were rushed or anything like that. And then in Orlando, I think it's like finding your voice, get togetherness and finding your voice. Coach Mose allows us to teach, to coach, to have a say in things. Now he's going to be the end all person with it, but like allowing you to find your voice and to really discover almost like who you are as a coach and a person. I think that's really big. And I talked to some of our other coaches around there that are younger, and this is like their first experience of having a coach that really cares about them doing that. And that's big time, because sometimes you're just locked into the film room or whatever.
Yeah, but no doubt.
Finding your voice. And so I say that also as a takeaway. That's why I think it's important to work on your value system. If you have that, working on being able to reset yourself when you get off track from that value system, and then what's your practice every day? I'm thinking back to your other question, but do you have a simple like breathing practice and like almost a meditation piece where you practice all those little tiny things of how I want to show up today and being able to handle that? I think just getting in a good space every day is really important to show up, because it's easy to look ahead, but no, I need to get back to today, like right here, right now.
Yeah. That was the big Virginia deal a few years ago, where it was be where your feet are, and how do you get people to stay present? Because as I have messaged or learned, a cliche at some point, where stress comes from worrying about the past, anxiety comes from worrying about the future. Just be present, and that stuff tends to go away.
Yeah. And I think also with the magic, like there's a couple things I've, not only the what I said earlier, but like the messaging, the importance of messaging every single day. Like that's something I've really learned with Orlando, and getting everyone on the same page with that message and just believing it with everything you've got. And you should be able at the end of the year to be like, what is our team about? And everyone should be able to answer like what that is. And you just hang your hat on that. That's a lot of what the NBA is too, but what is the message we believe in?
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's the program anchor in any high achieving organization is what are we about? And can everybody message that rather than just, oh, I don't know, it's on the wall here somewhere. But appreciate you coming on. Thanks for taking the time today. Looking forward to seeing you when you get back today, 3-1.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
This podcast was also brought to you by ttroops.com. As coaches, our inboxes will get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. TeachHoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you gotta keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at TeachHoops.com. And mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks, and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.